Fans, we have a special segment coming up brought to us by Volvo Cars of Walnut Creek and Nation's Giant Hamburgers. This past winter, Bill King, legendary Bay Area broadcaster, received the highest honor given to a baseball broadcaster when he received the Ford C. Frick Award for Excellence in Broadcasting from the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York. Bill King began his career behind the mic during World War II with the Armed Forces Radio Network, recreating games for the troops. Bill brought games to life with his lively phrases and use of language, perhaps best remembered for the exclamation, "Holy Toledo!" when a particularly wild event happened. Bill began his Bay Area career in 1958, joining Russ Hodges and Lon Simmons on the original Giants broadcast. Over his six-decade career, Bill described the action of the championship seasons of the Warriors, Raiders, and Athletics. Bill King meant the world to me. When I started my show in 1998, he was always there to give me encouragement, but most of all, respect for the work I was doing, interviewing those connected to the game while chronicling the oral history of baseball on a daily basis. Bill's door was always open to me. He was a dear friend, and I miss him every time I walk into the ballpark. His passing in 2005 was one of my saddest days, but what a life he lived. Bill's love of opera and ballet. Bill was an accomplished and wonderful artist, an expert in Russian history, a voracious reader, and an accomplished sailor. Those were just some of his loves away from the park. I'm thrilled to play for you some of my conversations with Bill over the years. Just hearing his voice makes my day. He never wasted a word, and his use of language is unsurpassed. Now here's Bill King talking some baseball with me. Holy Toledo!
Well, you know, the team was doing so badly under Jackie Moore in the 86 season, and they got in one of those losing streaks. You know, it's as if you fell down and can't get up. And it went on and on in June, and finally it was one of those managerial death watches, and Roy Eisenhart decided to make a managerial change, and he fired Jackie. And then there was an interim period where Jeff Newman managed the club, I believe, for seven games, while management tried to decide on which way they wanted to go for a new manager. Now, mind you, that was the year that Jose Canseco was having his Rookie of the Year season, but still things were not going well for the A's. And finally, when they decided on Tony La Russa, Tony had been fired a short time before as the manager of the White Sox and had planned to take the rest of the summer off and travel with his wife and two young daughters at the time. But this opportunity came along, and I think there was a meeting of the minds with the Haas family, and he made a sharp 180 and decided to take the job. But he needed a few days to get his family settled, to get himself in order, and it was deemed that La Russa regime would begin right after the All-Star game in Boston. And as Tony watched what was going on in this interim period with Jeff Newman managing, Dave Stewart had only been with the club a few weeks. He had been cast loose by Philadelphia after having been cast loose before that by the Rangers, and had tried out, actually thrown on the side on a road trip in Baltimore, and subsequently signed. He'd worked a few games in relief, but there'd been no determination whether he had a future here or not. And in watching the games in that short period, Tony La Russa decided Dave Stewart was going to go into the rotation and he would start the first game under La Russa after the All-Star break, and as it turned out, against Roger Clemens. And that started an incredible series that lasted over a number of years, in which Stu bested Roger, I think, all but one occasion in their head-to-head meetings. Stewart, of course, was a guy who had great confidence and a tremendous work ethic. Certainly, you can say that of Roger Clemens, too. But somehow, it got under Roger Clemens' hide. And Roger Clemens would do bizarre things sometimes, as we saw on a number of occasions. He would have very good games, but Stu would wind up winning. He would have a bad game, and Stu would wind up winning. And it became, I thought, from a distance, an obsession with Clemens. Stu, with every passing meeting, his confidence grew and grew. And, of course, that was just the sort of building block on what was a tremendous career for a short period of time, beginning at a relatively late stage age-wise in his career.
Another aspect of that team, which I'd love for you to reflect on, is Dennis Eckersley and what you thought when he first came over. Because when he came over from the Cubs, he was really at the end of the road for him.
He was done. He was done. And he's admitted that in retrospect since. And I don't know whether they really had any idea exactly what his role was going to be. He made a couple of starts, but he didn't last deep in the games. And it took a while. And then he worked out of the pen. He didn't like that at all. There was no defined role as closer at the time. And Jay Howell was the closer.
Well, Bill, thanks for a really nice baseball memory.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Marty. Ask me some more questions.
All right.